Hello and welcome to our program about books, brought to you by Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Kathleen Schock, and during the next half hour, we will be reading articles from the San Antonio Express News and talking about books, books, and more books. I'm going to open our segment with an article about the total eclipse. I hope many of you got to see it, and we should always continue to look up. That is the title of our book. It's written by Laurie Bajorek, published by Barnes & Noble Press, and sells for $15.99. The review is written by Cameron Kimball with BookTrib.com. On April 8, 2024, a total eclipse of the sun swept across several United States states. This was a moment in time for us all to look up. Look up at the eclipse. Look up from your screens. Look up to someone and inspire others to look up to you. We generally tell kids not to look at the sun, and for good reason. But what do we do about times like the upcoming solar eclipse? This incredible celestial phenomenon is not to be missed, especially since there isn't another one for the next 55 years. Is there a way to view it safely? Laurie Bajorek, president and CEO of the National Exports Association, or NEA, is here to say, yes, there is. Her informative children's book, Look Up, Barnes & Noble Press, written especially for the solar eclipse, educates readers of every age on how to safely enjoy the once-in-a-lifetime event. Not only that, but it also encourages us to all look up in other ways, to turn our faces to the sky rather than towards our phones, and think of others who make us feel as inspired as we do when gazing into the sky. In the first pages of Look Up, we follow the narrator and her son as they prepare for the solar eclipse. They don their eclipse glasses and watch the phases of the event begin. Phase one, as the moon first appears to make contact with the sun. Then comes phase two, as more and more of the sun is obstructed. Finally, there comes a moment everyone's been waiting for. Phase three, total eclipse. As beautiful as it is fleeting, the total eclipse doesn't last forever. Totality's gone, it's true. The rhyming prose read as phase four begins. But look, Bailey's beads appear. A stunning debut. And then, finally, phase five. The sun and moon fully part ways, and everyone is left with a memory of a beautiful display. While helpful and informative in its own right, Look Up is just one element of a larger project to educate the public about eclipses. The multimedia initiative features a website where teachers can find a toolkit specifically designed for teaching students about safely observing an eclipse. These lesson plans will foster curiosity, awe, and a deeper understanding of the Great North American Eclipse. As the president and CEO of NEA, a champion for game-centered programs for enhanced K-12 learning, Bajoric is a pro at designing engaging educational content for kids. Not only has she created learning materials for kids in anticipation of celestial events, she brought materials as well. She donated 200,000 special eclipse glasses to the New York City Public Library and has also organized a public service announcement from the New York City Mayor's Office. The goal was to educate everyone, young and old, on watching this eclipse safely and responsibly. And with everything Bajoric's been doing to get this news out to the public, she's well on her way there. With all the information stored inside Look Up, readers can look skyward, wearing their eclipse-safe glasses, of course, armed with the full knowledge of what constitutes this once-in-a-lifetime celestial event. Not on the same scale, of course, but we do have a unique situation arising with 36 literary voices uniting to craft a tale of community. The title of this offering is 14 Days, and it's going to be published by HarperCollins. The article is contributed by BookTrib.com. The iconic Margaret Atwood and American author Doug Preston have spearheaded a unique novel in which 36 noted authors of the Authors Guild contribute by each creating and writing about one character living in a Lower East Side apartment building in Manhattan, telling stories on the rooftop 1 week into the COVID-19 shutdown. In launching 14 Days, published by HarperCollins, each author was tasked with creating an eccentric character. They would make up the tenets of the building and, in effect, build the narrative. The guidelines were loose, and the authors had no knowledge of what the others were writing about. It was the idea of Atwood and Preston to weave the work together into one strong literary voice. I had the challenge of figuring out how to bring strangers together as a community, both among the authors and the characters they created, Preston says. The book features an all-star lineup of contributors: Atwood, Preston, Diana Gabaldon, Emma Donoghue, Sylvia Day, Dave Eggers, Tess Gerritsen, John Grisham, Celeste Ng, Tommy Orange, Erica Young, R.L. Stein, Scott Turow, Meg Wurlitzer, Roxana Robinson, Charlie Jane Anders, Janine Capo-Crusette, Angie Cruz, Pat Cummins, Joseph Cassara, Maria Hinojosa, Myra Jacob, C.J. Lyons, Mary Pope Osborne, Alice Randall, Carolyn Randall, Williams, Ishmael Reed, Nellie Rosario, James Shapiro, Hampton Sides, Nafisa Thompson Spires, Monique Turong, Luis Alberto Urrea, Rachel Vale, Wilkie Wang, and Deshaun Charles Winslow. Did you recognize some of those names? I surely did. 14 Days draws readers into a Lower East Side tenement, ambitiously called the Fernsby Arms, a building left behind by neighborhood gentrification and wealthier New Yorkers fleeing the pandemic. The bored, working-class residents of Fernsby Arms have little to do with each other until one of them bursts the bolts on the door to the roof. One by one, the tenants began to illegally gather on top of the building. Perched high above a city that has abandoned them, they convene to watch the sunset, cheer for healthcare workers, and share stories about their lives. As the chapters unfold, the lonely, weary, and sometimes contentious neighbors begin to band together, creating a found family to weather the storm. Their rooftop becomes a microcosm of the world around them, under siege by a plague, as well as a love letter to the resilient and indomitable spirit of New York City. I had the challenge of figuring out how to bring strangers together as a community, both among the authors and the characters they created, Preston says. All proceeds from the book will go to support the Authors Guild Foundation, which ensures the broad diversity of stories that are essential for democracy to flourish, fights book bans and library closures, and advocates for causes important to authors. Again, the title of that book is 14 Days. 14 Days should be a very interesting read, and I think on the special list as well will be these four books in which women survive the worst and make fantasy worlds better. These reviews are offered by Charlie Jane Anders as a special to the Washington Post. Charlie Jane Anders is the author of Victories Greater Than Death and Dreams Bigger Than Heartache, the first two books in a young adult trilogy. Science fiction and fantasy are awash with heroines who have amazing powers, but it's slightly rarer to find a female protagonist with real emotional depth, one who can face up to the darkness and hold on to her humanity. Luckily, some recent novels feature women who go through hell, literally in one case, but still manage to build rich, beautiful relationships. Along the way, each also helps to build a better world. The Light Pirate by Lily Brooke Dalton feels like a small miracle. A book about a world wrecked by climate change that manages to be full of warmth and compassion. Wanda is born in near future Florida during a catastrophic storm that decimates her family, and we follow her into old age as the world slowly transforms. Brooks Dalton unstintingly portrays the devastation and suffering that come with floods and temperatures too high to go outside during the day. But the real genius of the Light Pirate lies in the gentleness with which Brooke Dalton treats her characters, who could easily have been one-note stereotypes in the hands of a less skilled author. When you first meet a survivalist prepper who is stockpiling goods, for example, you think you know who this person is. But Brooke Dalton peels back layer after layer until a more complex, lovable portrayal emerges. Wanda has ill-defined psychic powers involving glowing bacteria, which feel a bit unnecessary in an otherwise grounded novel. But overall, The Light Pirate is proof that climate fiction is maturing and producing works that are both nuanced and nourishing. That is The Light Pirate by Lily Brooks Dalton. The Daughters of Iztahar by Hadir Isabai also features characters who defy expectations. Nahal's parents force her to marry Nico, a scion of a rich family. But Nico turns out not to be the jerk you were expecting. Instead, he's a feminist who's secretly in love with Georgiana, a bookseller and activist who fights for women's rights. Georgina is heartbroken that the man she loves has married someone else. But the two women still become uneasy allies. Espy's Egyptian-inspired fantasy world is compelling and fascinating. And Espy shows how patriarchy weighs these two women down, despite Nahal's high social status and Nico's best intentions. Both Georgiana and Nahal possess magical abilities which serve as a metaphor for the ways that women's power is suppressed. The Daughters of Izdahar takes its characters to some scary places, but it also shows how their alliances can help them flourish. The Daughters of Izdahar by Hadir Elspy. A top-notch science fiction romance comes along once in a blue quasar. So, The Red Scholar's Wake by Aliette de Bodard is worth celebrating. When data analyst Zig-C marries the human avatar of a sentient pirate ship, Ricefish, it's just supposed to be a business arrangement. But then, the two begin to develop feelings for each other. The pirate ship and her new wife have plenty of disagreements about the morality of piracy, but also about what makes for a good marriage, lending some sparks to their post-marital courtship. The Red Scholar's Wake spins a thrilling yarn about pirate rivalries and epic battles, while proving a more than worthy addition to the canon of post-human space opera. And the romance is really, really hot. You'll want to read this one twice. First, to hold your breath as these two wives discover each other. And second, to soak up all the clever ideas and lovely moments that feel totally human, even in this star-spanning context. Oh ho! Sounds like a little skin-prickling story. That title again is The Red Scholar's Wake. It's by Aliette de Bodard. Finally, Leigh Bardugo's Ninth House, a novel about magical shenanigans among Yale University's secret societies, was an utter triumph. So the return of protagonist Alex Stern and her mystical version of the Ivy League is very welcome in the sequel Hellbent. Alex is solving the usual assortment of magical murders and ancient mysteries. But she's also striving to rescue her mentor from hell, which requires her to gather a bigger team around her. Watching this damaged loner bring together a squad of ride-and-die friends is endlessly fun, and Bardugo finds new depths to most of her supporting cast. Hellbent feels like a worthy continuation of the story begun in Ninth House. Through the activities of those secret societies, take a bit of a back seat this time around. Alex remains a great urban fantasy hero, stomping along the edge of the abyss while her past threatens to catch up with her. In a season of books about women who survive the unthinkable and still keep open hearts, Alex is both the ultimate survivor and the best at making friends. And that book is Hell Bent by Lee Bardugo. Well, those all sound like very interesting reads. I like science fiction. It's good for a different perspective. Lots of times they're really dealing with current issues just in a non-threatening format. So let's review those four titles again. It's The Light Pirate by Lily Brooks Dalton, The Daughters of Istahar by Hadir Elsby, The Red Scholar's Wake by Alouette de Bodard, and Hell Bent by Lee Bardugo. Excellent reads, excellent reads. We're going to delve a little bit into an author, Delia Ephron. The novelist and screenwriter gets a second chance with Left on Earth. This is an interview, and it's put together by Annabelle Gutterman, who is with Time. Your memoir chronicles your leukemia diagnosis in 2017, 5 years after losing your sister Nora to the same cancer. Throughout the book, you repeat this mantra, "You are not your sister." Do you still find yourself saying that? Response: I never said that to myself until I got sick, and my doctors began to say it. They wanted me to believe that I could survive. Nora and I were so close. Being a younger sister, I tried to do everything she did when I was young. So the idea that they were saying to me, "You are not your sister," and I had to believe that maybe to survive, it was mind-blowing. I felt like I was betraying her. All they really meant was your disease under a microscope is different from Nora's, so you can have a different outcome. But they knew how much my mind was bound up with my sister. It was empowering and it was traumatic, both things at once. Question. You describe in vivid terms what it was like to fall into a deep depression after your stem cell transplant. What was it like to revisit that dark period in your life? Response. It's a very bleak place to be intensely depressed. You can't be allowed by anyone to make decisions for yourself when you're depressed like that. My husband, Peter, knew he could not let me make a decision, and my doctors knew that I was not going to be in control. The most important thing is to let people who love you take care of you. I'm embarrassed to say this, but it was so joyful to write this book because I was able to take control of it. I was able to get to the other side of it. Question. Speaking of joy, you also tell the story of falling in love with Peter after losing your first husband to cancer shortly before your diagnosis. You wrote this about the first time you spoke with Peter on the phone. We were both 72, and age meant nothing. How did you come to realize that? Response. Life is about being alive to things, right? With me, I didn't have a choice. I just fell in love. I must have been open to it. Some people are, and some people aren't. And having had a really wonderful marriage made me more trusting. I knew what it was like to fall in love. My mind was on Peter all day. I could feel the chemistry through the bone. We were emailing a million times a day. Question. You might not know this, but there is a great little rom-com movie about emails. What is it about emails that can be so romantic? Response. Oh, they're playful and very spontaneous. It's a little bit more than a text. It's something you can shape. It's not more romantic than endlessly talking at night on the phone, but there's something about that feeling. You've got mail. Your book, here's the final question. Your book beautifully blends these high, wonderful feelings with the very real darkness of loss. How has death changed your relationship with love? We were 72 when we met. It's right there. Death is all around us, all the time. It's some sort of defiance of it, as well as just thinking that you want to get every single thing out of life while you can get it. Peter makes every day better. It's different to be older and fall in love. I know who I am. One of the hardest things about falling in love when you're younger is you're also trying to figure out everything else. Interesting lady. That was an interview with Delia Ephron, who is a novelist and screenwriter. Her memoir is entitled Left on 10th. We're going to close our segment today with some poetry. If you can remember back a little bit, the title of this poem is After the Big Freeze. It's by Karen Lee Weideman, who is a core member of the Peace Center in San Antonio. Cold, so raw, it hurts my face. Under mountains of blankets, the sock-covered tips of my toes seek the tips of yours until we find warmth together. I put my face deep under the blankets. Awake, I read Chick Lit. Watch Lupin on my phone. There's no TV. I have no strength to do more. The cold has taken it all. Everything falls away but survival. After 4 days, on Friday, the storm has ended. Sunlight blasts away the gray, throws glitter, blinds us so we hardly grieve flowers that now look like boiled spinach. Now I reach out to friends, neighbors. Are you okay? Do you have water? How are you doing? Surges of love back and forth tell me what is most important. Living to give. To reach out. To take care of each other. I think we're learning something. A wonderful sentiment. And if you would like to include your thoughts, you can write your poem and send it to the San Antonio Express News, Post Office Box 2171, SATX 78297. You have been listening to About Books on Owl Radio. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone. You may listen at your convenience on our podcast page, www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening to this program. It will be replayed this evening between 8 and 10. This is Kathleen Schock saying goodbye from Owl Radio.